there isn't this trade-off of return and impact. There can be, and there can be trade-offs you can decide to make.
Thanks for tuning into Capsule. This is Haley.
And this is Bochu. In each episode, we discuss the need-to-knows of impact investing with the help of CapShift's community. Today, we're joined by Will Mucci and Connor Douglas.
Will is the Managing Director of Impact Investments at CapShift, leading the research team in all things due diligence, portfolio construction, and investment monitoring. Will began his career at Cambridge Associates and most recently worked as an investor at HarbourVest Partners.
Connor is a client director with Milk & Honey PR, one of the highest scoring B Corp communications agencies in the world. Connor also serves as U.S. lead of Milk & Honey's Impact Division, where he specializes in driving PR and communication strategy for purpose-driven organizations.
A bonus? They're also childhood best friends. Today, Will and Connor are going to help us define impact investing and bust some of the common myths around ESG, performance, and more. Welcome, folks.
So, Will and Connor, I know the two of you have known each other for a long time. Could you tell us the story there?
I was 12 years old and you like came up to me at the pool one day in the summer and was like, Connor, we're doing this fantasy football league. Like, I already signed you up. Here's your team name. Here's your login information. And it was just very much like, that's Will Mucci to me. He's someone that just like directs things and is on your side and by your side. So that's kind of what I think of when I'm thinking about when I really got to know Will.
Yeah. Try to be a connector.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's been continuously running since you were 12?
Yep. We've just celebrated our 20th anniversary of our fantasy football league. And I think 7 of the 10 members have all been part of the league for those 20 years.
Your fantasy football league is an adult.
Yeah.
Can't drink yet.
Connor, given your role at Milk & Honey, I'm sure you're interfacing with a lot of different clients who might have varying definitions of impact investing. Can you share with us what some of those are?
If we're talking about clients and people that I interface with that are directly in impact investing, I would say the definition is, broadly speaking, they understand that impact investing is marrying corporate profit with some kind of social and or environmental good. And, you know, what's interesting just in speaking with people, and this is including myself, I'm far from an expert in this space, but speaking with people that don't have a strong knowledge of what impact investing is, they usually associate it with some kind of environmental movement. Mm-hmm. So they think of decarbonization, eco projects, you know, clean energy, stuff like that. And I think that's because of just the broader zeitgeist that we're in, you know, with the climate crisis and kind of the role of business, how that's become so much more of a recognizable and hot topic nowadays. So people kind of just see impact investing and they think, you know, business's role in the environment.
Mm-hmm. As our resident expert in all things impact investments, Will, what's kind of your perspective?
Yeah, I think my perspective, and Connor makes a good point about climate and that being a very, you know, big topic when you talk about impact investing, but it's not the only topic. And I think really what impact investing is to me is investing capital with a purpose, and that purpose or intentionality is around generating some sort of tangible positive outcome. Mm-hmm. It can be a positive outcome related to the environment and helping provide solutions for the climate crisis. It can be a social outcome in helping to serve underserved communities to build affordable housing.
And just to kind of jump in there, I mean, something that was impactful for me when I was learning about this was one of the organizations that we worked with was an impact investor that specifically specialized in healthcare and financial services. Mm-hmm. They were working with a genomic company in like emerging markets in Asia. And that wasn't about necessarily what we talked about of like, oh, it's environmental or it's climate crisis. Like they were just innovating healthcare spaces for communities that needed it most. So it can be such a broad topic and can have so many different forms of impact. So I think that's what makes it so dynamic.
Yeah, and I think every industry or theme within the impact space is a little bit of a spectrum where there are more impactful investments, there are more impactful companies. So you can be an impact investor in a lot of different themes. if you just know where to look and know what you're looking for.
What's really interesting about that is even within those sectors, they can look very different depending on asset class and sort of the vehicle, right? So for example, affordable housing, you might look at a debt product, right? That helps fund affordable housing. In the health space, it could be a venture fund that's really looking at really new solutions or new kind of treatment plans. So there's even within, I think, each of those themes, there's this huge range of opportunities.
Will, you've mentioned that impact investing is kind of on a spectrum and maybe ESG is on one side and there's other options kind of further along at different points of the spectrum. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. And I think the spectrum that I think through or talk about is there's level of impact that you move across as you change the types of investments you're making. So when we think about ESG or SRI investing, we're talking a lot about frameworks for evaluating risk that provide values alignment and perhaps indirect impacts, you know, with where you place your capital. As you move further on the spectrum of impact investing, you start to see more and more direct impact being created. So as you move away from ESG framework investing or SRI investing, and you move further into alternatives or private impact investing, you start to see an ability to create more direct impact with your capital.
Will, can you give us an idea of what that might look like?
Certainly. You know, when we think about an investment that has a direct impact or direct outcome, we might be talking about an investment directly into a company creating some sort of technology solution to address climate change. Or we might be talking about investing in a project that's creating affordable housing in a very specific area. Or we might be talking about investing in a debt fund that's lending to small and medium-sized businesses in emerging markets. These are ways where your capital are flowing directly to solutions to problems presented, whether you define it by sustainable development goals or impact areas or impact themes. These are investments where capital is directly flowing to solutions for tangible impact objectives or impact outcomes.
So you've been talking about the spectrum of impact. Will, I'm wondering how returns and risks and timeline kind of work with that spectrum, and then also how you kind of use all of those different considerations to build a portfolio.
No, it's a great question, because when we think about a spectrum, we kind of think of a straight line moving right across, where it's maybe high returns and lower or indirect impact is over here and lower returns and higher impact is over here. But that's actually not the case. There are things that are high returning and high impact, and there are things that are low impact and low returning. So it's really a cross section. And what we try to do is figure out, whenever we look at an investment opportunity, where does it sit on this cross-sectional plane of direct impact versus indirect impact, risk, and then return as well? And we take all of that into consideration when we build a portfolio, and we try to, based on a client's goals and needs, build a portfolio that fits ultimately their risk and return objectives as well as their impact objectives. So a good example of that is, there are venture funds out there that are super high direct impact. They might be investing in, like I mentioned, clean technology or climate tech or ed tech or, you know, educational service companies, whatever you want to call the strategy. But they, at their core, they're venture capital funds. So on the risk return spectrum, you know, there's higher risk and higher return, and those returns and risk are commensurate with the much broader venture capital landscape, whether it's impact or not. So that has an impact role in the portfolio, but it also has a traditional investment role in the portfolio. And we evaluate that, and we move that into a portfolio based on where it sits on that cross-sectional plane. I think it's really important to not think about any of these investments in a vacuum. I think it's really important to understand how your investments move together, not just on a risk-return basis, but on an impact basis and values alignment basis as well.
Connor, do you have any questions about impact investing that you have or you've heard people ask that you think Will could answer?
I think it goes to a conversation I was having with a friend recently. He was actually talking about an ESG fund that he's involved in. So he invested in an ESG fund, and he said to me, like, one of the companies in the fund was one of the large oil and gas companies. Mm-hmm. And to the untrained eye, to someone who's not in impact investing, the first thought is probably, well, that doesn't seem like a very impactful organization or one that's doing, you know, we talked about climate earlier, we talked about green investing, like that doesn't seem like that fits into that bucket. So I guess my question would be, how should the layperson define impact investing? Like what makes an organization a fund and impact investor? What are the parameters or the standards that you all use?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. And I think I go back to this idea of intentionality and understanding what a strategy is. So an oil and gas company can show up in an ESG fund for a number of reasons. And again, it all goes back to what is a strategy? An oil and gas company can show up in an ESG fund because the fund is stated to be diversified across all sectors and they're going to own energy and oil and gas regardless. And maybe that oil and gas fund is the best of the worst, right? Mm-hmm. It can be the best ESG profiled oil and gas fund out of that entire sector. And this fund strategy needs to own a piece of this sector. Mm-hmm. So that's one way it could show up. There's another way it could show up where, and this is, you know, if we move further on the spectrum of impact, for a potentially higher impact reason, maybe this strategy of this fund is to own the highest polluting companies, the worst actors, the most brown industries, dirty industries, and their goal is to own them in order to influence change or mm-hmm. to force change. Because again, when you own a company, you have a seat at the table and you have the ability to influence them. So that's another way that an oil and gas fund can show up in an ESG strategy or an ESG mm-hmm. portfolio. And then there are other times where you see oil and gas fund or oil and gas companies completely stripped out of portfolios. And that's this idea of divestment or screening. And that's another type of ESG strategy. So you might see it come out of the portfolio because of that. But to understand why it's in that portfolio, what impact it's having in the portfolio, you need to understand the intentionality of the strategy for the product you're buying, which is super important. Whether we're talking about ESG or, you know, when we move further on the impact spectrum to talk about private strategies that are investing in really high impact stuff. Mm-hmm.
I think what's really interesting is oftentimes this sort of inconsistency is framed as a negative thing, but in reality, it gives investors more choice in figuring out which type of approach best suits their personal strategy, right? Is it
100%.
Divestment? Is it activism, right? I'm going to own this and I'm going to really make it known that I want the brownest industries to change. Is it we want to encourage, right, the best in the space? So I think that's kind of this really interesting perspective.
It goes back to what do you want to do? What do you want to generate with your investment capital? And I think the nice part about where we sit at CapShift within this space is that we get the opportunity not to make those like discrete, you know, selections mm-hmm. between one fund or one company. We get to marry it across a portfolio. So we get to say, okay, in our equities, we're going to completely divest. And maybe in our privates, we're going to invest in decarbonization or energy transition companies. And, you know, marrying kind of how you're aligned with your one side of your portfolio and another side of your portfolio gives you a real opportunity to like totally create a portfolio or create a thesis that is backed by your objectives. And I think that's really powerful for people.
Another question I had, because we focused so much on the energy sector, I feel like so far in this conversation
yeah.
and you know, energy transition and things like that, but maybe you can get to the breadth that impact investing really encapsulates.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of industries that people wouldn't inherently understand are impactful. And I think, you know, one of them is the financial services industry, particularly companies that are providing access to financial capital for folks. General conception is that banks are big businesses that want to make a lot of money and sometimes, you know, prey on people. But I think the thing that we found is there are a lot of smaller banking and financial service companies out there that are doing really unique stuff to provide financial products to underserved individuals, unbanked individuals, communities that don't have access to the same breadth of financial products that we have, savings accounts, student loans, personal loans, home equity loans, business loans, all of this stuff that larger organizations or wealthier individuals can go to commercial banks to get. I think there's a lot of organizations that we've supported through the years that provide access to those financial products to folks that have historically not been able to get them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think with that, just financial services in general or financials in general is a really interesting place where impact can be pretty outsized.
Yeah.
And I don't think everyone would just inherently know that.
Because
again, money is power, and the more money we can get into small businesses or get into the hands of individuals who are historically unable to access those products, the more they have ability to grow and you know, change their lives.
Mm-hmm.
On the topic of areas of unexpected impact, I actually came across a really interesting data point the other day. Morgan Stanley released a report surveying 1,000 investors across the US, just complete random sample, very large sample size. And one stat really stuck out to me, which is 82% of very conservative investors are report being very or somewhat interested in impact investing. And that is set against 94% of very liberal investors. So there is a gap, but really it's a much smaller gap than I had assumed, given sort of all of the, you know, public discourse around impact investing and the backlash there. So I would love for both of you to comment on that.
Yeah, I think it's not surprising to me that there's a smaller gap than you would expect, because at the end of the day, people inherently want to create good in their communities.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to do well while doing good, or whatever that phrase is. Mm-hmm. But very much how we talk about impact investing is about how we tell stories and how we frame what we're doing with our capital. And you probably have, you know, an even better view of this, but I think there's a lot of rhetoric and buzzwords that create politicized notions about what you're doing with your capital that draw people away from the actual underlying objectives.
Yeah.
But in your work, and I'd love to hear about this, how do you uncover the buzzwords like you've talked about, and you know, get to the objectives, get to what people really want to accomplish? Because that stat to me says we all kind of want to accomplish the same thing.
Look, the stat's really interesting to me because I think it goes to my whole role in PR, and especially in purpose PR, which is I'm in charge of public perception and, you know, what's connecting with broad audiences. And, you know, I think what's frustrating, especially in the US, is this broader topic of impact investing has kind of been caught up in a fraught political and cultural moment that we're in right now. So, you know, certainly if you bring up the topic impact investing to someone who's on the right wing of the political spectrum, they may immediately be opposed to it because it, you know, represents the broader shift of corporations pushing an agenda they don't agree with, you know, whatever their conception of that term is. But if you bring up an individual impact that an individual organization is doing that that person really cares about, then all of a sudden, you know, they kind of flip their script. So to answer your question, you know, my role is, as someone who's in communications, is really bringing those stories to life, you know, making that impact tangible, you know, talking about what is it that's unique that you're doing? Like, what are the true outcomes that it's having? How is it materially improving the lives of individuals, the lives of the communities that are important to you? How is it creating larger changes in business and society? And the more you can really kind of dig into the details and just, you know, make that known, I think that it's going to cut through some of these political differences and probably explains why we have this alignment, you know, when we think we wouldn't have this alignment. So yeah, that's usually how I kind of approach it from a communications perspective.
I also think that when we talk about impact investing, the impact is kind of up to you, right? If you're investing based on your values, and your values are wildlife conservation, someone else's could be affordable housing, someone else's could be something entirely different. We impact professionals like aren't deciding that for you. And I think that's something that can kind of get lost in this discourse. There's no like political agenda assigned to investing according to your values. You can invest according to very politically conservative values or other values. It's kind of open.
Yeah. And I think that's what, and I loved what both of you said there, and the framing particularly around your values are up to you, and it's about removing public perception and about, you know, raising the tangible. Mm-hmm. So how can we align sort of the tangible with what the values are? The interesting thing about the statistic and this idea that we're actually not as different as we think we are is that if you ask people, hey, would it be great if everyone had, you know, clean drinking water? Or would it be great if everyone had a roof over their head? Or what do you think about if we invested $100 million in this community, we could create 100,000 jobs? Every single person would say, sign me up for that. That sounds great. And I think that's what's really going on here under the hood, but it gets lost in all of like you talked about, Connor, all of this buzzword and perception generation and idea that someone else is choosing for me what to believe in. Mm-hmm. But in reality, the proliferation of impact investment opportunities has done nothing but give people more choice and more freedom to speak with their dollars and to invest in things they care about.
Yeah.
And more choice is always better for the investor, the consumer, whoever you are.
And what I really liked about what you said at first, and I'm paraphrasing, but something like everyone wants to do good and make money. You know, I'm with Milk and Honey PR. We really specialize in helping out purpose-driven organizations. But it all is kind of revolved around this theme that profit and purpose are inextricably linked. And when I think about impact investing, that is really like the proof of concept to that whole idea that, you know, taking care of your people, taking care of the environment, taking care of the communities around you, it's not only in concert with doing well financially, but it's imperative to doing well financially, especially in today's culture. And again, coming from a PR perspective, what we've talked about over the last 5 years really is think about consumers and how they're making purchasing decisions today. Everyone, like every walk of life, every step that they take, they want to be, you know, investing in things that are doing good. They want to be buying products that have a larger goal than just, you know, what's within the organization.
Yeah, I want to double click on something you said just there. As impact investors is, you know, a huge part of our investment thesis, our, you know, ability to move capital is that there isn't this trade-off of return and impact. There can be, and there can be trade-offs you can decide to make if you decide that outsized impact or a much higher level of impact is important to you. But like there are very clear ways to make money, generate financial return, market rate returns, and, you know, generate impact or a potential for impact. And I think as an investor, we think about that. Companies who are B Corps that are for profit, they think about that. This isn't philanthropy. It's not, it's not charity. It's about, like you said, marrying those two concepts of profit and purpose. There's this notion that if you are an impact investor or you decide to make an impact investment, you're immediately giving up something in terms of what a traditional investment has. And that's just not always the case. That's like anything, there are, you know, exceptions to that, but there's meaningful ways to generate strong returns and through impact investment.
Thanks for tuning into Capsule, Impact Investing in a Nutshell.
This podcast is brought to you by Capshift. Capshift brings impact investing solutions at scale to the world's largest financial, charitable, and corporate institutions. To learn more, visit us at capshift.com.
This episode was produced by yours truly with production assistance from Deanna Diaz. Sound design is by Riley Board.
A heads up, our goal is to provide insights, not to tell you how to invest. None of the speakers on today's episode were making an offer to invest in any product, and this conversation is not a recommendation of any products or services from Capshift. Please see the show notes for all important disclosures.
Until next time, this is Capsule.